Hi, I'm Dr. Poppy Moon, and I'm a professor of both school and clinical mental health counseling. I'm a licensed professional counseling supervisor and a national board certified counselor. Join me as I give you tips, techniques, and insight into the world of counseling. Groups go through different stages as they move along. So there's different parts to it. The first part that you get to is the beginning stage. And this is when everybody comes and they're just getting used to each other. You know, they're drinking the bad coffee that's over in the corner with some stale donuts. Everyone's kind of nervous. They don't know quite what to expect. So in that group, the group leader is basically just laying down the rules. What are we going to do? What's the comfort level? What's the context of the group? Just getting to know you. Then it moves on into the middle working stage, and that is a time, and I'm going to tell you like some of the more specific stages, but this is general. The middle working stage is when people, you know, maybe not the first time, but the second and third times they come back, they've had their coffee, they start to know each other's names and what the things are that other people are talking about, and the actual work of the group, whatever its focus is, begins. And then at the very end, you have the ending or the closing stage. And that is when everyone is sad and they say goodbye and the group is ending. And most all groups have a beginning and an end. Some groups don't, but most of them will be like, say that you're at a clinical mental health center, a group would run for 4 weeks or for 6 weeks. So you know how long it's going to be. If you were in school and you're running a group for kids, maybe it would be for 4 or 5 sessions, maybe 2 or 3 sessions. It would just depend on the amount of time that you have. So there's this cool guy, Mr. Tuckman, and he did a lot of research and came up with some stages, 7 stages of groups. The first one is called the forming stage. I was talking about the beginning. They're meeting, they're talking about their backgrounds, you're just getting to know each other. Second stage is the storming stage. Before a group really starts to get to work, sometimes there are some things that have to be worked out. And let's say that you were in a group that you were working with some men who had just gotten out of prison and they have to come to the group. They don't like each other, or some of them have personal issues with each other that they are just kind of like, I don't want to be at the group. That guy needs to shut up because he's talking too much. I don't want to listen to anybody anymore. Sometimes there's a kind of time where everything is starting to work out. And the group is also kind of checking out the leader. They're like, hey, is the leader really in charge of this group? You know, are they going to set down the rules that they had talked about at the beginning? Or are they going to be kind of wishy-washy? And then some group members might have more pull and they start to kind of take over the group. So the storming stage is kind of volatile. So you need to be a really strong group leader to be able to kind of weather through this. And that's why I recommend that if you are going to ever do groups, that you first watch someone who is a group leader who does a good job with groups. That way you'll have someone to model. And I always tell people, please go to as many experiences as you can. I tell my students, hey, even if you don't have any problems, go to a counselor for 2 or 3 times just to see what it feels like to be a client. And you can also watch that counselor and say, ooh, I didn't like how she did that. Or, oh, I really like how he did that. I'm going to take that into myself as a counselor. Because if you don't do this, then you're not going to know what the process is. Had this student, kills me. Okay. She wouldn't do that. It was kind of a bonus thing. Please do this and you'll learn more. And she's like, oh, no, I would never go to a counselor because I want my counseling to be authentic. And I feel like I won't be authentic if I've actually gone to counseling myself. And I was like, I don't know that I agree with you at all on that. So I hope that the people that are going to her authentic counseling, I hope that's working out well for her. But I think it's important. Find someone who's leading a group that you think is great, and then just go and just watch them. And you don't even have to participate in the group. If you don't want to, you could just sit back and you could watch them do their thing. Okay, so then we get to the norming stage. So we've weathered the storming stage and people are starting to get along. The group leader has established themselves as someone who has boundaries and is going to keep those boundaries. And they have people start to understand each other and respect each other. I find sometimes that there is a person, and I'm not sure if that's going to be in this next stage. No, this is still back on the storming stage. You'll have a person, and this happens even with kids groups. there's someone with a very strong personality and they want to talk all the time, and the group leader and everyone else kind of wants them to be quiet, and the group leader will try to like stop them. So they'll be talking, and be like, whoa, 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 Thomas, hang on. I think we want to get, Eric needs to get a word in edgewise. And he's like, oh, okay, just a minute. And then he just keeps talking. And that can be super frustrating for everybody. So one of the things you need to focus on is making sure if someone's trying to take over the session, that you're right there and you're ready to kind of break that pattern. When I was getting my doctorate, my LPC, I had to work in, and I was pretty young. I was in my early 20s when this started. And I was doing a group of people who had different, types of disorders, like bipolar disorder, or some people were substance abusers, or they had depression. It was an adult group with a lot of people with a lot of different things in there. And there were a few people in there, and of course they're older than me. And hey, we're in the South, right? So we always respect people that are older than us. And it was very hard for me at first to be able to say, stop. You know, I'm in control of the group. I'm running what we're doing. We're not talking over each other. Please stop. And sometimes there was a lady that would come and she would try to take over my job and be like, oh, you know, I can help facilitate the group, which is why it's very important that you are on point when you go in there and you have your mind, this is what I'm going to do. And it was hard for me. It was very difficult for me to feel like I could tell someone that was older than me to stop talking or to please follow the group rules. And I worked on it, and now it's fine. So if you start doing groups and you're feeling uncomfortable, try not to let that show and just think in your mind, what can I do to kind of get this back on point? Okay, next up, our performing stage. Everybody trusts each other. Everybody likes each other. All of those things have been worked out, and they are working towards the goal, whatever the goal is that you set up at the very beginning. And then the last stage is the adjourning stage, and that is where everyone is happy. They've worked through the stuff. We're finally eating the last coffee and donuts. We're saying, hey, everybody's doing a great job. I'm always here to help you. If you need any extra assistance, they know how to contact the group leader. They know how to contact other people in the group if they want to kind of keep together and keep tabs on each other. And then you go into termination. And termination is our goal. It's always our goal when we're doing groups. So sometimes you may have an ongoing group, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But for example, if you're doing a small group with kids in schools, maybe you're talking about anger management, you know that they're going to be there and you're going to terminate on the fourth session. So it's important that you plan so that you are ready to go through these different things. So there are some guys that have come up with 15 therapeutic forces, and they are Jacobs, Schimmel, and Mr. Harvey. And I always am interested in who these people are. What do they do? Do they like sit together and they're like, let's do some research and find out different things about groups? So I guess that's what these guys did, and they put it together. So these are the 15 things that you want to kind of keep an eye on when you're doing small groups. And the first one is the clarity of purpose. So in unsuccessful groups, the leader is often unclear what the purpose is, and that confuses the members. So for instance, the group leader might say, this is an educational group. We're going to learn about organizational skills. But instead of teaching organizational skills and doing organizational skills activity, they might just do therapy with kids in the group. And they would be very confused. They're like, I thought we were here for organizational skills, and now we're talking about how to be a good friend. So you need to be ready with what you're focusing on. Or the group leader might say, this is a support group, but spend most of the group focusing on one person and maybe a topic that's not relevant. So you're in a group and you've got a kid that you're in this group working on organizational skills. And this kid is like, oh, I'm really sad today. And the counselor's like, oh, well, tell us a little bit about why you're being sad. And then the kid tells a story, and then the counselor feels kind of sad. So she's asking more questions. So then it becomes kind of an individual session instead of a full group session. So keep an eye out for that and make sure that you're keeping the clarity, you're staying on the purpose. Okay, the next thing is the purpose needs to be relevant for the group members to feel comfortable. So let's say that you were in a group with third graders and you were talking about relationship skills, but you're talking about, oh, when you get into middle school, you might have a girlfriend or boyfriend, and this is the way that you would treat them. And the third graders are kind of like, what is she even talking about? And this isn't relevant because they're not going to be in middle school for a couple of grades. So you want to make sure that you're focusing on the relevance. You're staying on task on what you're going to work on. Now, group size, I talked a little bit about this last week. Group size totally can mess up with your whole dynamics. The size of the group is going to depend in part on its purpose and the length and times of each session, when the setting is available, and the experience of the group leader. So 5 to 8 is kind of the ideal number for most groups. Like I said last week, I like to do 4 to 6 with small groups with little people. With kids that are a bit older, you can go 5 to 8. It just depends. But say that you were doing a specific group for high schoolers on career development, you could have maybe 5 to 15 members in there if you wanted to. So it would be up to you, depending on how you felt, how you feel that that's going to work out. If you have a group that's really, really large, sometimes kids will be hesitant to share stuff, or they'll feel like, I don't have enough time to share because we're only in here for 45 minutes and this kid's been talking so long and the group leader's not making sure we all have equal time. And that would be kind of upsetting. That'd be upsetting to me too. But also, if you have a group that's too small, group members can feel too much pressure to participate. And that can make them feel negative towards the group because it's like, oh, I've got to say something. I don't really have anything to say. And then they start to feel uncomfortable. So you got to keep your eye on the group size and see how that's working for you. The length of the sessions, you need to be sure that you have enough time for each sessions because you don't ever want to have that kid who leaves feeling like they didn't have their chance to share. The group never really accomplishes much and sharing doesn't get real personal. So for educational groups in schools, probably 40 to 45 minutes is good for an older kids group. If you have littles in elementary, 30 to 40 minutes is also good for that. But let's say that you were in a clinical mental health program and you were doing group therapy and support for kids in a residential setting, group can go from like 1.5 hours to up to 3 hours. This adult group that I was talking about that I did, it lasted for 3 hours. And by the time I left that group, I thought I was exhausted. So kind of know your limits too. Can you keep up that counseling attitude for a full 3 hours? If not, then your groups probably just need to be less. And that doesn't make a difference. That doesn't mean you're a bad counselor or anything like that. It's just that you just find it stressful for longer groups. So you could do maybe more groups during the week, just depending on how that works for you. And so that brings us right into the frequency of the meeting. So the number of meetings per month that you're going to have is going to depend on a bunch of different factors. And the most important factors are the purpose of the group and the composition of the group members. So if you were in a residential setting, let's say we're in a residential setting for teenagers, they might have group every single day in the afternoon, or they might have specific groups 2 to 3 times a week. So normally also in a residential setting, they're getting individual counseling as well. So sometimes in the morning, they will have their individual sessions. And then in the afternoons, they'll have a longer group session. Support groups like your AA or what is it, Alateen, different groups like that, they probably meet once or twice a month somewhere. And a group leader should pay attention to the effect of the interval between sessions. So if you are running a small group in schools, especially with your younger kids, you may want to have that once a week, you know, a frequency like that. Or if you want to do a career group, you might have that once a week over a period of a month. But it's totally up to you and how that works for you. Another thing that is important is the time of day for the leader and for the members. So if you decide, oh, okay, I'm going to have my group and they're going to meet right after lunch, or we're going to have it right at the end of the day at school, you're probably tired. When I was a school counselor, by, I don't know, 1:30 after doing large group classroom sessions and then seeing a bunch of kids about things and then having to deal with administration, sitting down at the end of the day was exhausting for me. I did like doing lunch bunch groups where the kids come to you with their lunch and you sit down and you do a group like that. So that works well. And then you get to eat. Because, you know, a lot of times when you're a counselor, it's even hard to get your lunch in, especially if things are crazy. So do a lunch bunch group and all the kids love it, especially if they love you as the school counselor, they'll want to come be in your group. So focus on the time and see how it feels and the time that you think works best. Don't take kids out of PE. A lot of times they'll say, oh, PE doesn't matter. Just take them out of their PE. It's fine. Well, those kids really enjoy that part of the day where they can go and run around and just be a kid. So don't pull them out if you can help it. A lot of times I'll go to different teachers and I'll just ask them. I'll say, hey, when is a good time for me to pull these kids out? I'd like to do it. You know, these are the times that are best for me. What are the times that are really good for you? And work with them so that you make sure that the kids are not having to leave fun stuff just to come and see you, because they're not going to like it so much. You're going to be like, oh, in PE, we're playing with that parachute. You guys know what I'm talking about? That big parachute that the kids. And so you miss out on that and the kid would kind of be sad. All right. Next thing that we want to focus on is the adequacy of the setting. Is this a location that is easily accessible, and is it private? You also will want to see if the room is comfortable. Like, what are the wall decorations like? What is the seating in the room? Like, what is the arrangement of the chairs? So, sometimes the librarian may let you come and do some stuff in the library. Other times, maybe it's a classroom that's not being used or a portable. You just want to make sure it's a place where it's private, and sometimes you may want to leave materials that you're using. For example, if part of your session was to use a word wall, and I can give you this, I'll put it on there. A word wall is, I have maybe 200 different words, all in different fonts and a different color paper, and you will cut those out and you can laminate them and you can keep them forever. And the kids can take those and they can use them kind of like those poem magnets or story magnets, and you give them some painter's tape and they can put their story on the wall, and they may still be working at it at the end of the session and you don't want to take it down. So try to find a place where they can leave their stuff up, where it stays private and another kids aren't going to come in there and pull it off the wall or mess with it or something like that. So always think about how the setting, how do you like it? Are the chairs the right size? For little people, small chairs are great because it feels more comfortable. Or do you have bean bags that you can put in there? Or is there a comfortable carpet that they don't mind sitting on? Also decide, are you going to use desks? I don't like using desks during group because it feels like there's this teacher-student relationship. I think the best way is on the floor or in chairs in a circle where everybody can see each other. I love to do art therapy when I do small groups with kids. So I also like a room where the desks are not there, or I can move them away and then we can lay on the floor and we can do our art activity together, and it's a nice place to be. So check that out. Okay. Next thing that will affect a group is the leader's attitude. First thing off the bat is the problem with inability to control negative members. When I was getting my doctorate, the thing that I was doing was sand tray therapy with kids who were having behavior problems in class. And I wanted to know if pulling them out and doing sand tray therapy with them calmed them down before they went back to class. But boy, let me tell you, I had some firecrackers. I had some firecrackers in there that were just off the chain. And obviously, you know, those are the kids I wanted to work with to do this with. But it was just, I'll be honest with you, it was just miserable with some of those kids because they would throw sand or they would mess up each other's sand tray just to be annoying. And it was hard for me. And I had a hard time controlling those groups. So I didn't think that it was a whole lot of fun. So before you choose the members for your group, it's okay for you to also think, are these kids that are going to be a super disciplined problem and are going to ruin the group for other kids? And if that's the case, then you probably don't want to put them in your group. Hello. My little dog, Finn, has come here. You want to be part of the group there, he says. Okay. The next thing is having a leader who has a negative attitude. For instance, if someone is required to do a group and they don't really want to, so they just go in there and they're just not fun at all, that's also something, or something with little interest. Say your principal's like, I want you to do a group on anxiety, and that is not something you know a lot about, and you don't know how to work with kids who have anxiety, you're not really interested in it, maybe your attitude going into that isn't as great as it could be. So try to keep that in mind when you are selecting the groups that you're going to do. Okay, so I had spoken a little bit about this earlier, and I'll go ahead and talk about it now. Groups can be open or closed. Open groups mean anybody can join at any point in time. Closed group means nobody else gets to come in. So what do I think? What do I think about this? I think closed groups are great if you're focusing on a specific skill. So let's say I'm working with middle school students and I'm working on friendship skills. And I know that this specific group of kids needs to specifically work on just basic manners. I just want them to work on basic manners. I carefully select those kids because, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in another lecture on down the line, but when you're selecting kids for the group, that's kind of a process. You're picking the kids that you think are going to work best together as a group. You don't want to pick kids that are going to be the ones that talk too much or they're going to disrupt everybody. And you just want this group of kids. You don't want to add anybody else to it. So that's going to be your closed group, and you're going to have it set up for however many sessions. So I'm going to work with these specific kids for 4 weeks. We're going to do a 45 minutes small group lesson a week, and then we'll be terminating at the very end of that. It won't continue. So that's going to be my closed group. An open group would be, let's say that I had a group for kids who were new and had just joined my school. And those kids would meet once a week, maybe lunch bunch, something like that. As new students come to the school, they can join the group. As students have been there for, you know, a month or two and they're pretty set and they understand what's going on, then they can leave the group. So the group will always be very fluid. It'll be changing. And that is an open group. And it just depends on you and how you feel about doing that. If you're cool with kids coming into your group, that's fine. But I like to have mostly closed groups and select those group members. Next thing, this is probably not going to happen at school, but I'm going to comment it because it's one of those 15 things. Voluntary or non-voluntary membership. It'd be nice if all groups were voluntary, but sometimes if you are working with people from the court, or if you are working in a correctional institution, or if you are working in maybe an adolescent treatment center, or you're working in a school setting, maybe for kids in an alternative setting, and group participation is mandatory, those kids may not want to be there. And I'm sure the people that are in jail or in a residential setting, they don't want to come to your group. They don't care what you have to say. And they make that very clear to you as soon as you come in. They're like, I'm not going to be here. And they can really screw up the whole group dynamic. Like I was telling you, that group that I was running with the adults, that one lady wanted to kind of take everything over and some of them were just kind of angry. It was not as fun as I think that groups where the kids actually want to be in there. So it's important that you be able to adapt to this dynamic. So if you are a really good group leader and you're able to control the group and lead it in the direction that you want it to go in, it's probably going to work out okay for you. But just be aware that sometimes those negative attitudes can be very, very difficult, and it's hard for you to keep it together. Okay, next up is members' level of commitment. I was working in it wasn't a residential center, but it was, the kids had to meet each day. It was an adolescent drug treatment center, and it was for kids who had been arrested for drugs, for different types of drugs. Most of it was marijuana. Sometimes it was a little bit of cocaine, just kind of a mix of kids that were in there. And they didn't want to be there because they were court ordered. So when I went into this group and I had my co-leader, Dr. Willis, he was also there with me. They were hostile towards us and they were disruptive, and it was frustrating to do groups where we were sitting around in a circle talking about things, because they would just pick on other members or they would say stupid stuff, and it was miserable. So Brad and I had to think, what can we do to make this group good enough that they're going to want to come and they're going to want to have a fun time? And that's when I started getting more into the art therapy stuff, because then they could spread out on the floor. They would have an assignment. One of my favorite ones is self-portraits, where you would make a portrait of yourself, of how the world sees you, and then a portrait of yourself as you see you as the real person. And then we would come back together at the end, and the kids would show their self-portraits and explain the difference between the two. And always when you're doing something like that, if a kid doesn't want to explain what's going on, they don't have to, but I'm always like, tell me about your pictures. That's the word of the play therapist or of the art therapist. Tell me more about your picture. Tell me about that. And I found that that worked. They could spread out and they had a project to do. And then they started to become more committed because they knew, ooh, every day when I come in, we're going to get to do something new and something fun. So when you're doing groups, pay attention. And if you think that those that are forced to attend are miserable and aren't having a good time, think, what can I do to make this more fun? And my thing is always group therapy. Another way that you can know if there's commitment is you're planning your group before you get started. You will have a list of kids that you think, these are okay, this is who I want in my group. But I always recommend that you do a pre-group interview. And that's where you pull the kid in individually and you say, hey, this is this group I'm having. This is what we're going to be doing in it. It's going to be for 4 weeks. We're going to be talking about organizational skills. What do you think about that? What do you think you would be interested in something like that? And if you can see the kids kind of like, I don't really want to do that, then that's probably not someone that you should select for the group. So interview them before it starts, and then you can kind of get a feel on their level of commitment. Okay, next thing is the level of trust among members. Trust is something that is going to develop over time if the group is moving in a positive direction. So I was saying over at the very beginning where you have that beginning stage of group where you're drinking the stale coffee and eating the donuts, people are checking each other out. Can I trust this guy? Can I trust this lady to keep it? Can I feel like I can share and I'm going to be safe? It's going to develop if you know your boundaries as a group leader. The problems start to happen when members have different points of view and you feel like you can't, that their points of view are going to kind of clash with each other and it's going to make it uncomfortable. That can happen with adolescents a lot, where they kind of posture with each other and want to just mess with each other. So trust in those groups is often difficult to facilitate. I think that you can do some trust building exercises and you can look up different activities to help build trust. Sometimes groups will work out well and sometimes they don't. So you just have to check with that. Especially in schools where confidentiality, you're trying to explain to this kid, hey, we're in a group. This is what confidentiality is. We don't share things with other people. But you never know. You never know with kids because they like to share stuff with other people. Like, oh my God, you know, Sally said this in group. Can you believe it? And then Sally's trust is just broken. So you need to be very careful in working with trust and explaining how important it is to the kids. Next one, members towards the, their attitudes towards the leader. Do the people in the group like the leader? Do they respect her? Do they respect the leadership skills? So in most groups, members are going to have a variety of feelings towards the leader. And that's why I say when you start the group, know who you are and know where you're going, know what your path is. And then you can just stay on that path. And normally people will respect the group leader. But if you're in those places like it's in one of those correctional facilities and it's a residential facility, they don't want to be there. Sometimes there's a lot of anger towards the group leader. I'm sure we'll talk about this more in some of the lectures, but it's okay for you to ask the person what's going on. You'd be like, I'm really feeling like you're angry with me right now, and I'm not quite sure where that's coming from. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you're feeling? What are some things that I could do to make you feel more comfortable? So that's a confrontation. And I'm sure you guys have learned this in your techniques class, but a confrontation is when someone is giving you a vibe and it's just not kind of jiving with how you're feeling. Like maybe they're acting a particular way, but you're just not thinking that. So I would just say, hey, tell me what's going on. And you could also do this privately. After the group got finished meeting, you could pull that person aside and say, I feel like you're not having a good experience, or I feel like you're very angry with me, or that you're upset with me. And I just want to check in with you and see, are there things that I can do to make this group more successful for you? And that's being proactive. And that's taking care of it. Okay. Next thing is the leader's experience in leading groups. A beginning leader may be an anti-therapeutic force because they lack skills. They may be nervous and they may make mistakes. And I feel like that group I did with those adults, I really felt like I was nervous. I felt like I lacked skills and I felt like I was most definitely making mistakes with them. Your first groups with people, you may feel nervous. You may make mistakes, and that's okay. And it was okay. I felt like it was okay for me to say to them, hey guys, look, I'm new to this. I'm just starting out as the group leader and I don't know my way around everything, but I'm going to do my best and I'm going to try. And I want you guys to give me feedback as we go along so I can become better and better. And over a period of time, things started to work out. They were happy to help me out. And I started to feel more successful as a group leader. But you need to be able to have some experience. You need to know about counseling theories and what theories and techniques you're going to use in the group to be successful. That's why I think that everyone who's starting out in group therapy should probably have a co-leader who understands what's going on and who can help you, and you can watch them. In schools that I've taught in the past, they have in their group counseling courses where you will, in your interim or in your practicum, you will sit in with a school counselor while they run a small group, and you'll watch that. And then when you're in your internship, you will be responsible for running a small group on your own. So I'm not sure if they do that here at A-State, but that's great. So if you ever can sit in with a school counselor on one of his or her groups, then that would be a good idea for you. Now, co-leading a group. I think co-leading a group is great, and it takes a lot of the stress off of you. I was telling you about me and Dr. Willis when we were doing that with the adolescent kids. He and I are always in sync. Even now, we've known each other for a really long time. We can always hop in a group, and we've got a real positive dynamic between us. But if you have two group leaders that are on different theories, or if they just don't like each other very much, it can be anti-therapeutic. So make sure that your co-leader that you're feeling good about. All right, yay, now we've done all the theory stuff. We're right at the end, so you're gonna be glad. We had talked about some of the things that you could do with your first small groups last week. This time, if we are planning maybe a second school counseling group, these are just some ideas that you might could do. First thing is check in. Everybody comes in. So you can say, hey, here, not here, make sure everyone's there, and then check in with everyone on what's your high this week and what's your low this week. So just to kind of get the group started, just to kind of oil the wheels. And they've added this little activity that's a possibility. It's called the M&M feeling activity. And you can go online and just type in M&M feeling activity. And this that I pulled up here, it also had a blank one. They were a PDF, and you can pull the blank one off and you can do the same activity. Or you can go on Teachers Pay Teachers and pay like $20. to get a little PDF off there. So I found it for free online. So just check that out. So everybody gets an M&M basically, and each M&M you will share a different thing. So here we've got our friend Yellow. You're saying one thing that makes you excited, or your friend Brown, what thing that makes you sad. So there's several different ones, and you could go around robin with the kids and they could all tell one and then eat the M&M and then go around and eat the M&M. So it's kind of fun. Everybody likes to eat M&Ms. So unless they're peanut, because my mom loves those. I hate peanut M&Ms. I always have. So if we're doing a group, don't bring the peanuts, just for me. Okay. Another activity is called Color My Personality activity. And this is illustrate your personality using colors, shapes, images, and capture your personality on paper. And then after they do that, they're going to share it in a large group. This is art therapy. I'm always for art therapy. I have, and I think I will find it and I will put it on our Blackboard. I have a thing called Dr. Moon's Magic Counseling Box. And in that, I have everything that you might ever want. And it's like a suitcase that you can pull along. And I've got paper and glue and sparkles and scissors and cool scissors that make cool edges, all of this stuff. And I just bring it with me. And so that way I can just pull out neat stuff like this and we can do an art therapy activity. No problem. Let's see. So here's what we have. This is what questions you can ask after you're doing this activity. So what colors did you use and how do they reflect your personality? Here's another one. In one word, adjective, describe yourself. What did you learn about yourself as a result of completing this activity? You guys can read the rest of them. But you just have a bunch of kind of open-ended questions that the student can use that they can share more about themselves. Here is another one. This is called the question game. So every student records an anonymous question that they would like to have answered by the group. And you would ask them, say, hey, ask questions that are going to help us facilitate discussion or build trust or insight. If you have smart aleck kids, they'll be like, you know, why is Todd so stupid? Which is why you want to get all of the questions that they ask, kind of put them in a hat. So if you open them up and you see that it's a dumb question that's not going to help anybody, you can just toss that one and move it on to the next one. So you would read it out loud, whatever the question is. So maybe it's like, how do you deal with your boyfriend when he says he doesn't want to be with you anymore? If you were working with a girls group, and then you can use that as a discussion question. And finally, the closing round of the group is you could say, okay, guys, what's a word or a phrase? 15 seconds. What stood out to you at group today? What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about somebody else? What's something that you learned that you can take and you can go outside and you can work on this and you can be successful? So, yes, we are done. That is the stages of group. So now everybody knows those. And if you have any questions for me about that, I'm always happy to answer questions for you.